Holding on Nuntes Omidbey's seven lines from the bottom. We're discussing the point that a Kohen Gadol has a mitzvah. Besides, as a regular Kohen, he would have a mitzvah not to marry a grusha, a zoyna, or a chalala, and midrabanan also a chalutza. A Kohen Gadol, in addition, has a mitzvah that he's not allowed to marry an almana either, and he has a mitzvah, as I say, that he has to marry a besula. So we were discussing in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, and in the Gemara yesterday about the ins and outs of that. We had the Tanakhama had said he's not allowed to marry a Begeres either. He has to have to marry a Tana or a Naira, because once she becomes a Begeres, then her Besulim are not as intact as they were before, whereas Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon allowed it. And we said he's not allowed to marry a Mukas Eitz, where she was injured by wood and lost her besulim that way. Rashi learns that that's according to specifically Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon. Other Rishonim learn that it's according to everybody. An interesting point, by the way, worth mentioning in this connection, why indeed does the Torah put such rules on a Kohen Gadol? So first of all, the fact that he's not allowed to marry an almana, there's a very interesting, well, the fact that he has to marry a besula and one at such a young age, the Sefer Achinuch, has an interesting take on it. He says, essentially, since the Kohen Gadol is the ruchniistic leader of the Jewish people, therefore, and in particularly Davins on their behalf in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you want that his wife, where after all, Ishtek Gufoy, should be as maximally as possible devoted to him and not even ever have had any thoughts of any other men. So if she's had relations, necessarily she's going to have a certain mental attachment to them, and even a begeres, fine, she hasn't had relations, but still, she's already of the age where she's starting to think about them. Therefore, the Torah Davka wants them to marry one who's a besula and one who's young, relatively, within 6 months after bas mitzvah, and that way we can be sure as much as possible that her thoughts are completely on him, and there's not even a trace of thought of anybody else. The fact that he can't marry an almana, in addition, there's an interesting idea brought from Reb Chaim Paltiel, who was a Rishon in the times of Maharam Rutenberg. He has a Pirush on Torah. He points out the Kohen Gadol, after all, goes into the Kodesh Kedoshim on Yom Kippur. He uses the Shem HaMeforosh. What happens if he has an eye on a certain woman who's already married, and then he takes advantage during that when he's using Hashem's Shem HaMeforosh to ask that her husband should die so he should be able to marry her. So therefore, the Torah bans an almana to him. Interesting little tidbits about this. Ultimately, like all other mitzvahs, we may find reasons for them, but this is how Hashem says, and that's how it is. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, Anusas Atzmai Mufutas Atzmai L'Yisa. A Kohen Gadol is not allowed to, given that he has to marry a besula, he's not allowed to marry a woman whom he himself raped or he himself seduced. Because at that point, when he marries her, she's no longer a besula. The imnasa nasri, if he did marry her, then he's married, as we'll see in the Gemara soon what that means. On the other hand, anusas chaveru, mufutas chaveru laisa. Now, what about if the woman was raped or seduced by somebody else? Also loyisa, he also shouldn't marry her. The imnasa, what happens if he does marry her? Then you have a machlokes. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and Vlad cholol. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says any child from that will be a cholol, because again he was over on the mitzvah that the Torah says that he has to marry a besula and not a ba'ula. V'chamim a Vlad kosher. The chacham said the child will be kosher because ultimately, the fact that he has to marry a besula is a mitzvah saseh, and they're going to say that you can't have a cholol from an ester. We're going to get to that point. We're going to get back to that point in the Gemara. So first of all, we said imnasa nasri. We said if he's married, then he's married. So what does that mean? Nevertheless, he's going to have to give her a get and divorce her. In the first case, we're talking about where he himself had relations with her outside of marriage. Now, later on, he's marrying her, so we're saying he has to divorce her. So the question is, so what does the b'raisa mean when it says, if he's married, then he's married? It sounds like the b'raisa is saying that b'dievet, if he married her, then it's okay, and he doesn't have to divorce her. But you're telling me that he does. So in what sense is he nosa nosri? In what way is that negei la halacha? Amar v'ach b'yakob, loy mashein mashalim knas b'mefuta. It means that if he seduced her specifically, then he would not have to pay the knas. Now, the Torah tells us like this. when a man rapes a girl, and we're talking about she's not married, so there's no mitzvah based involved. It's just that she's a knight of the Sula. So then he has to pay a knas. And in addition, he's required to marry her if she and or her father consent to it, which, I mean, you know, you would think he raped her, would she want to have anything to do with him? But, you know, in conditions as they were in those times where she might otherwise not be able to get married at all, she might figure that this guy is her least worst option. Whatever. Anyway, the point is that obviously she or her father, if she's young, have the right of refusal. But if they want, then he has to marry, even if otherwise he wouldn't have wanted to marry her because she's ugly or diseased or who knows what. Anyway, so now that's with oinus. When it comes to mafata, the Torah says it a little differently. He has to either marry her or pay the knas. If he marries her, then he's writing her out of ksuba as if she was still a basula, and that ksuba takes the place of the knas that he would otherwise pay. He has to pay, the pasuk says 50 shkalim, a shekel is 4 zuz, so instead he's writing out a ksuba of 200 zuz, which would be the normal amount for a basula. And so one cancels out the other. Now what we're saying is like this. Now let's look at this case of the Kohen Gadol. He seduced this woman and had relations with her outside of marriage. What is the Torah saying? That he either pays the knas or he marries her. In this case, we're saying he's also to marry her because she's not a basula. But if he was over and did that, nevertheless, then what that accomplishes is now he's potter from paying, that now he's potter from paying the knas. That's what we mean by im nasa nasui. So we don't mean that he's allowed to stay married to her, as Rav Huna is telling us he has to divorce her, but it accomplishes that he doesn't have to pay the knas anymore. Tosva says the fact of the matter is you're still talking about it, it's the same amount of money. What's the difference? So first of all, Tosva says one possibility is she could be moichel huksuba. So if she was moichel huksuba, then it comes out he's not paying anything. Another possibility, Tosfos says, is how do you pay respectively? When you pay for nizikin, you have to pay from idis, if you're paying with land, you have to pay with your best quality land. A ksuba, on the other hand, you only have to pay with ziburis, your worst quality land. So therefore, it's a nafkamina there, which one you're paying. And then also Tosfos goes on to say, this whole point that we're saying, that first of all, the whole ksuba, the ksuba that he would give her in this case is really only dirabanan. And fourth of all, Tosfos says, this that we're saying he has to divorce her is really also only dirabanan. D'oraisa, they would have been allowed to stay married for reasons that the Gemara is going to mention in a minute. Only dirabanan are we requiring them to get divorced. So the Gemara says, Ozo Rav Gvia mi Beit Kostel Amr l'shmaita kamei dirabami. Rav Gvia mi Beit Kostel went and told over this statement of Rav Huna's to Rav Ashi. That if the Kohen Gadol himself had relations with her outside of marriage, then he's not allowed to marry her. And if it, not only he's not allowed to marry her, but if he does, then they have to get divorced. Omerle, said of Ashi, said to him, how could he say that? Both Rav and Rav Yechanan say that a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry a Begeres, as we said in our Mishnah, the Tanakhama said, and also not a Mukas Eit. So he's not allowed to marry them, but if he did marry her, then they're married, and they're obviously, we're not talking, there's no knas, so obviously im nasa nasui means they're allowed to stay married. Alma sofalias begeras taktav, or sofalias mukas eitz taktav. So what's the point? We're saying, ultimately, she's going to become a begeras while married to him. She's going to effectively become a mukas eitz while married to him, because right now, so let's say he did the way he's supposed to. He marries her as a ktana or a naira. But ultimately, she's going to become a begeres. And ultimately, he's going to have relations with her, and she's no longer going to have her psulin, which is the same thing that's accomplished by Mukas 8. So therefore, what we're saying is he should marry her when her psulin are fully intact, not damaged by wood, and not stretched out by begeres. But nevertheless, once that was done, b'diavad, it's kosher. So then, hochanami, sofali is ba'ula tachtav. So why don't we say the same thing over here, that in the end, she's going to be ba'ula when she's married to him. So in other words, in that sense, then, we should apply the same rule. We should say that if he had relations with her outside of marriage, then fine, he shouldn't be marrying her, but b'yebed, it's no worse than b'geras or mukas eitz. So how can Rav Huna say that in that case, you have to divorce her? And the answer is, the Gemara says, you're right, kasha. It's a kasha on Rav. Nevertheless, though, kasha is not tiyuvda, and in fact, most of the Rishonim paskin like Rab, that nevertheless it is osur. So when she was ba'ula by somebody else, then the Gemara is not even asking the question. The Ritva explains, because then there's obviously a big difference. The Gemara knows that there's a big difference between a ba'ila that has a certain gnai in it, where now it wasn't even him, it was somebody else, versus where it was him himself. So if it was so, the Gemara had no question why we would say he has to divorce her. It's true that Sofa Lias Ba'ula talked of, but not with this kind of gnai where it involves that it was somebody else. Only when it was with him himself is the Gemara entertaining the idea that maybe it should be allowed, but we're saying, so and we're leaving it at a kasha, why there would be the distinction, but nevertheless, that is the halacha. That he's not, that if he that is the halacha, that if he marries Anusa Satsma and Mufuta Satsma, he does need to get divorced. On the other hand, if he marries a Begeris or a Mukhas Eitz, then not, because then there's no Bia involved at all. Next, we said in the Braisa Anusas Chaveru and Mufuta Chaveru Lo Yisa, we said that if the woman was Anusa or Mufuta by another person, Lo Yisa, then the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry her, because she's not a Basula anymore. The Imnasa, if he did, then we had the Machlok, that's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and Avlad Cholol, Vacham, and Avlad Kosher. So what's the din of the child? So Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Halacha, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the Halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that the child of such a thing would be a Cholol. V'chein Amar Rav Gidol, Amar Rav, Halacha, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Rav Gidol said the same thing in the name of Rav. Ikadamri, another version of the statement was Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, not just that the halacha is like him, but my time is that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, according to the second version, he's not saying outright that the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, but rather why does he say that? Is because Savalacha Rabbi Elazar, because he holds like Rabbi Elazar that the fact that she had relations outside of marriage made her a zoina. We talked about this, we touched on this in the Gemara yesterday. We're going to have on Samach Aleph on the Beis in more detail the various opinions of Tanoim, what the definition of zoina is, who is also to a Kohen. We have, one of them is the opinion of Rabbi Elazar that any relations outside of marriage makes her a zoina. So therefore, so now Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is following that opinion. Having had relations outside of marriage, she's a zoina. And therefore, she's also even to a regular Kohen, and therefore, certainly to a Kohen Gadol. And therefore, like any other woman who's possible to a Kohen, if they have relations and the child is a Cholol. So the Gemara says, Umi Sovolo Kavaseh, how could you say Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov agrees with Rabbi Elazar Shita? But Hakaimalon Mishnas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Kav Venafi. We have a general rule, which we learned earlier in the Masechta, that the Mishnah of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is Kav, is a small amount. Relatively speaking, he's not quoted as much in the Mishnayos and in the Gemara and in the Braises as other Tanoim, but the Nuki, it's clean in the sense that whatever he says, the halacha is always like him. So therefore, the halacha would have to be like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. In this case, about Rabbi Elazar's definition of Zoyna, Rab Amram tells us in the name of Rab, the halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar. So if you're going to tell me that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds like Rabbi Elazar, then it's contradictory. Because if his opinion is based on the idea that Ponuya Bala Pnuya saw Zoyna, then how could it be? The halacha is not like that, but yet the halacha would be like him, that the child is a cholo. And again, the Gemara leaves it with Kasha. We still remain that way. Again, Kasha is not Tiyukta, meaning therefore that's how it is. The halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, whatever his reason is, even if it is because he's basing himself on Rabbi Elazar's opinion, nevertheless, we still say that the halacha is like him, the child is a cholo, maybe for a different reason, maybe not because of Rabbi Elazar's reason, but whatever it is, that's how it is. Kav v'noki, he said about Elazar ben Yaakov. Next. Rav Ashi Omar, so Rav Ashi says the reason behind the machlokes is something else. Not because Rav Elazar ben Yaakov holds of Rav Elazar's definition of Zoyna, but rather, b'yesh cholo mechayve esek kamifu. The machlokes is, can a cholo be created from something which is only an iser esek? So it's not that Rav Elazar ben Yaakov holds like Rav Elazar. So it's not because she's a Zoyna. There's no lav involved. All there is the Torah has a mitzvah saseh for the Kohen Gadol, v'hu ishu v'psaleho yikach, implying, therefore, that you should not marry a woman who is not a basula, and he was over on that. So that's a lava bomb called Esser, which has the force of an Esser. So now the question is, he was over on an Esser, so now the machlokas is, does that create a cholo? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov sava yesh cholo mechayve Esser, but Rabbanan Tzavri ain't cholo mechayve Esser. So they're arguing how a cholo can be produced. So that's all it is. Well, my time at Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, why does Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov
say, why does Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov say that even from an essay you can have a cholol? From a lav, we understand. A kohen marries a grusha or a zoyno, what have you, then the child is a cholol. But why should it be from a chayva essay? So like this, the pasuk says, Almana ugrusha v'chalolo zoyna, es eilo lo yutach. The Torah describes about a kohen gadol, he's not allowed to marry an almana or a divorcee or a chalolo or a zoyna. These he should not take. Ki im besula v'gomer. Rather, he should marry and he should take and marry a besula. Uchtiv, and the next pasuk continues, v'lo yechalol zarei ba'amav, that he should not profane, that he should not desecrate his children among his people. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, akulu. That those words v'lo yichalo zarei ba'amav apply to everything in the previous pasuk. So all the details, if any of them, if he marries an almana or a grusha, etc., or a non-besula, in all cases, then the child is a cholo. So that's how he learns it. V'rabbanon, where's the rabbanon? Answer: no. Eila hipsik inyan. The fact that it says es eila lo yikach implies that there's a break over there. It implies that only with some of them are we saying. So in other words, how does the Torah list it? It lists the chayve lavin, almonu grusha v'chalola zayna. All of those are obviously lavin. Then it says es eila lo yikach. Then it continues with the eser kiim besula me'am of yikach isha. So the chachamim say that eila comes to tell us only these, the ones that were just listed, namely the lavin, are v'lo yichalo zare ba'amav, not the eser. Which Tosfos says, I mean, then you could argue the other way around. You could say, on the contrary, maybe lo yichalol means that only if she's a non-besula is the child a cholol, and not if she's an almona or grusha or what have you. But Tosfos says, come on, it's more logical to say that a cholol is going to be produced from chayvei lavin, which after all, a lav is more serious than an eser. So anyway, that's what the Chachamim say. Because you have the words as eila lo yikach, then therefore that breaks it up. V'Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Omar. Now, what does Rav Elazar ben Yaakov answer to that? He says, Eila lama'utin nidya. He says, no, the Eila does not come to distinguish the Chayve Lavin from the Chayve Esa. What it comes to do is to distinguish a nidya from other kinds of Isurei Bia. Like this was saying, the Kohen Gadol, has relations with an Almona or a Grusha, etc., or with a non-Basula, then he makes the child a Cholol. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying, the Pasuk with the word Eila is implying for us that if he were to have relations with a woman, with his wife, let's say, while she's a Nida, it's an Isur Kores, but the child is not going to be a Cholol. Okay, so the Gemara says, Keman Ozla Hodetanya. Now, which opinion does it follow this that it says, which Tosfos brings from Toras Kohenim, by the way, that why do we need a miut for that? Because otherwise we would think to make a kavah chomer. Madach, you get a cholo from chayve lavin, how much more so from an isur kares.
Why the standard by the chachamim for a mamzer and here for a cholo are different? For a mamzer, they said you have to be chav kares. And here they say it's only a love.
Well, because that's how it is. The Torah is telling us that a Kohen is not.
What do you mean that's how it is? That's what I'm asking. Why is it like this?
Well, that's because let's look at what the Pesukim are telling us. What are the Pesukim are telling us? That a Kohen isha zoyna v'chalolo lo yikohu, v'isha grusha me'isha lo yikohu. And then a few Pesukim later, it tells us about the Kohen Gadol and adds all that and adds also that he can't marry an Amona. And the next words in the Pesuk are v'lo yichalol zare ba'amav, implying that if he does any of these things, then he's creating a cholo. So therefore, so that's how it is. A cholo, the Torah is clearly implying that something of the things that we're doing over here creates a cholo. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says all of them. The Chachamim say only the lavin. That has nothing to do with a mamzer. A mamzer is something else. We learned earlier in the Masechta that we learned that from a smichus over there, the fact that the Torah says lo yikach ishes ishes aviv, lo yigala knaf aviv, and the next pasuk is lo yaveh, or two pasukim later is lo yaveh mamzer b'kal Hashem. And we learned from that that a mamzer involves something of arayis, where all the arayis are in isur kares. But a cholol is something else. Here the Torah spells out the lo yichalol zarei ba'amav in connection with the isurei kahuna. So that's what it is. But now what we're saying now, in fact, that's the actual rule as the Gemara. We see it partly from our Gemara over here. We see it in more detail in a Gemara in Kedushin. The rule is that you get a cholol only from the isurim that are specific to Kohenim, namely Grusha, Chalala, Zoyna, for a Kohen Gadol and Almona, according to the Blazman Yaakov, also a non-Basula. But for example, we're saying over here, you don't get a Cholol from a Nidah, and similarly, you don't get a Cholol from other kinds of Isurei Bia. Suppose, for example, that a in other words, it has to be an Isur that's specific to Kahuna, not an Isur Ashova Bakol. If it's an Isur Ashova Bakol, that doesn't necessarily, that an Isur that applies collectively to the Jewish people, then that doesn't necessarily make the child a Cholol. It may make him other things. It may make him a Mamzer. It may make him a Nosin, etc., but not necessarily a Cholol. But the Cholol is specifically from these Isurei Kahuna that we're dealing with over here. So in Mamzer, the Mamzer may well be a Cholol. He can't very well do the Avodah and the Bes Mikdash, but it's different dinim. So the Gemara says.
So you're saying basically in effect that the halacha for the Kohanim is more lenient than even for a Kohen Gadol than the halacha for Israel.
No, on the contrary, the halacha is stricter for them. A Kohen can't marry a Grusha, Yisrael can. But the difference is, because a Grusha is only an Isur Lab rather than an Isur Kores, it doesn't create a Mamzer, it creates a Cholol.
Which amounts to the same thing with what I'm saying, which is that since one amounts to a chalo and the other one amounts to a kares, implying that the Isur of the Kohen is less than the Isur of the Israel. It doesn't make sense. Even a Kohen Gadol.
One second. The Isur of the Kohen is less. It's a lav rather than kares. A Kohen is not getting kares for marrying a grusha. A person is getting kares for having relations with his sister or with an Eish HaSish or what have you. So obviously the issue of the Kohen is more lenient. We're saying that, on the other hand, the Kohen has these rules which don't even apply to Yisrael. For Yisrael is perfectly allowed to marry a Grusha. There's not even an Issur Lav involved. Whereas for a Kohen, to marry a Grusha would be an Issur Lav. He'd be getting Malkus, and he's making his child a Cholol. Although a Yisrael marries a Grusha, there's no problem, and the child is completely kosher. That's the difference.
Fine, but you're saying that for a Kohen Gadol, it would be different.
No, so for a Kohen Gadol also. So a Kohen Gadol has all the rules of a Kohen Hedyot, plus an Almona, plus a non-Basula, but all of them are still Lavim, and actually a non-Basula is not even a Lav, it's an Esser. But let's go on, and if we need to discuss this later, then we'll revisit this afterwards, because we have ground to cover. Anyway, but that's how it is. That's how it is. You have Isurei Kores, and an Isur Kores is serious enough to create a Mamzer, and then you have Isurei Lavim, and we're saying that an Isur Lav, according to Rabbi Akiva, for Yisrael, an Isur Lav creates a Mamzer. The halacha is not like it. When it comes to a Kohen, though, an Isur Lav creates a Cholol, and now we're saying, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, so does an Isur Asei. But it has to be, for it to create a Cholol, it has to be a Lav that's specific to Kohenim, not, for example, a Nidah, which is general to all Jewish people. So the Gemara says, Kiman Ozla Hodatanya, which of these opinions does the following Braisa follow? Where the Braisa says, Me'ela Ata Oisa Cholol, only from these that are listed in the Pasuk can you create a Cholol. Ve'i Ata Oisa Cholol Minida, but you don't create a Cholol from a Nida. Kiman, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that would be like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Because that's what he's saying. In other words, that the word Eila is not excluding the Isser Asay, it's rather excluding a Nida, which is not even mentioned in the Pasuk. Well, the question is, well, according to the Chachamim, we understand why the Eila is in the middle, because it's breaking up the Isurei Lavim from the Isurei Esser. But according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that all five of them, Amona, Grusha, Chalola, Zoyna, and a non-Basula, all of them produce a Cholol, and only Eila, it excludes a Nida, so then it should say Eila at the end of the list. And again, the Gemara says Kasha. It's a Kasha, according to him, why the Pasuk is written that way. By the way, you should also keep in mind, there's a big difference between a Mamzer and a Cholol. A Mamzer is very sharply restricted whom he's allowed to marry among the Jewish people. He's not allowed to marry a born Bas Yisrael. He can marry a Mamzeres, he can marry a Gioras, he can marry a Shifcha Meshuchreres. Whereas a Cholol, there's no restrictions on whom a Cholol is allowed to marry. He's allowed to marry even a Bas Kohen. The Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, Loi Huzru Ksheiras Linosil Psulim, there's no Isser on a kosher woman to marry a posel. All it is by virtue of him being a Cholol, he's going to make her a Cholola, and their children are going to be Chololim because the status of Cholol gets transmitted to their children. But there's no restrictions on whom they're allowed to marry, unlike with a Mamzer. So that's a big difference also, and why it is that an Isur Lav shouldn't produce something as serious as a Mamzer, but it will produce a Cholol. So his kids can never, so he and his. Now, what you do have is, we touched on this briefly before, and we'll learn it in more detail in Kiddushin in a year and a half from now, Best Hashem, or thereabouts, that if a cholol marries a Bas Yisrael and they have a daughter, then I think that daughter, so that daughter, I think, is a cholola and still also to her and still also to Kohenim. But if that daughter then marries Yisrael, then that's it. The status of chalolos does not get transmitted to the next generation, and therefore, if they have a daughter, she's already kosher to marry a kohen. So daughters ultimately make it kosher.
But if they have sons,
then it goes on indefinitely. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Now let's digress to a different topic. It's not really a digression, it's related, but a different topic. We're talking about the women that a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry. Now, we know at the beginning of that same parasha, Parashas Emor, again, you know, if we were in Eretz Yisrael, this would be the parasha of the week, but we're not. But anyway, at the beginning of that parasha, the Torah talks about, for a Kohen Hedyot, which relatives is he able to become Tomei for? And one of them it lists, v'la'choisav psula, krov elav, his sister, who's still a psula, who's close to him, so her he's allowed to be metami for. So let's talk about the dinim of that. Tanan abanan, achoisei arusa, what if the sister is an arusa? So she hasn't yet done nisuin, she hasn't yet had relations with her husband. So when she's nisua, then for sure he can't be metami for her, then it's her husband's responsibility. But when she's an arusa, Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda say he's allowed to become tamei for her, Rav Yosef and Rav Shimon say no. What about anusa umaputa? What about if she had relations outside of marriage? Then divra hakol ein metamela, everybody would agree can't be metame because then she's not a psula anymore. We're going to go through, the Gemara is going to go through soon how the various tanoim darshan the psula. Umukas eight in metamela divra Reb Shimon, and Reb Shimon also adds that he can't be metame for his sister when she dies if she was a mukas eight. Shahoyer Reb Shimon Omer, Reb Shimon used to say the general rule is ruuya lakoin gadol metamela. Any case where she would be suitable to marry a kohen gadol, then her brother, a regular kohen, can be metamei for her. She'ein ru'uya l'kohen gadol ein metamei la. If she's not suitable to marry a kohen gadol, then her brother, a kohen, cannot be metamei for her. So therefore, now since a mukas eight, we said in the Mishnah that a mukas eight can't marry a kohen gadol, and Rashi is going l'shitasa that statement in the Mishnah was only according to Rabbi Lazar and Reb Shimon, not according to the Chachamim. Well, then Reb Shimon says if a kohen gadol can't marry her, then the brother can't be metame for her. Ubegeres metame la divrei kol adam. Now, on the other hand, everybody agrees, even Reb Meir, who says that a kohen gadol is not allowed to marry a begeres. Nevertheless, he agrees that if the woman was a begeretz and she passed away, then her brother, a kohen, is allowed to be metamei for her. A kohen gadol can't be metamei for his relatives anyway, only for a mes mitzvah. So we're talking specifically about a kohen hedyot. So far, again, we're saying like this. If she's a ketana or a naira, there's no question that her brother, a kohen, can be metamei for her. If she's a begeretz, we're saying also, as we're going to be marba from psukim soon, if she was mukas eitz, Reb Shimon says no, and the other chachamim say yes. And if she's anusa umaputa, everybody agrees that not, because she's not a basula anymore. And if she's nesua, also definitely not. And if she's arusa, then you have two tanoim who say that he can be metame, and two tanoim who say that he can't. So let's go through my time did a mayor for Rabbi Yehuda. Why did a mayor and Rabbi Yehuda say that if she's an arusa, then her brother, a regular kohen, can no longer be metame for her? So the Darshi Hachin, they darshan the pasuk as follows. Now the whole pasuk goes, v'la'choseh habsula ha'kroi v'elav, and for his sister of Basula who is close to him, asher lo'choseh la'ish, who was not married to a man, loch yitama, for who he can become tamei. So they darshan the phrases in the pasukim as follows. V'la'choseh habsula means prat la'anuso mafuta. The word achoseh habsula comes to exclude anuso mafuta because now she's not a once that took place, then she's no longer a basula. Yochol shani motzi af mukas eight. They continue. You would think that we should exclude also a mukas eight because she's missing her basulim as well. No, tamad loyma asher lo'choseh ish. That is why they say, that's why the pasuk continues, that she was not, meaning she was not married or had relations with a man, misha hava yosa al-day ish. meaning the Torah is only excluding when her havaya, when her becoming a different status, a non-basula, happened through a person. Yotzezu, she'en ava yosa ayde ish. As opposed to over here, it didn't happen through a person. It happened through a piece of wood. And therefore, so that doesn't prevent her from being considered achoisa basula, even though the physical basulim are missing. Next, when the pasuk says hakroiva, when it says the one who is close, so now Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda say, l'rabis harusa. That word, hakroiva, comes to include an arusa because she's not yet married to her husband. They've only done erusin. Therefore, she's still close to her brother. She still lives at home, for example. Which otherwise you would think, because after all, Rashi points out, the word havaya, the word hoisa, we often use in the Gemara to refer to Kedushin. So we would think, asher lo hoisa l'ish, means as soon as she's had havaya, as soon as she's become niskadish to a man, then it should be also to be metame for her, and therefore the mayor and the Rehuda are saying that, no, that's what the pasuk is stressing with the word hakroiva. Then when it says Elov, when it says the word Elov to him, L'rabas HaBegeres, then it comes to include also that he can be Matami for her, even though she's a Begeres. So the Gemara says, Ha'olam Alikra, why do I even need a Pasuk to add the Begeres? Va'amar Ameyer B'Sulaf in Mitzvah B'Sulam Mashma. We learned yesterday in the Gemara that when it says about the Kohen Gadol V'hu Ishav of Suleha Yikach, Rav Meir had explained over there that the word besula by itself would mean even if it's only partial besulim, and therefore we needed biv suleha to say that the besulim have to be fully intact, which is why he said that the Kohen Gadol can't marry a begeris. So we see that according to him, the word besula means as long as some besulim are still intact, so then a begeris is in that category. We don't need the word elav to include her. The answer is, we still need it. On the contrary, maybe we should learn the word besula, the definition of the word besula, from the besula of the Kohen Gadol. And say that just like the Kohen Gadol has to marry specifically a naira, maybe the same way a Kohen can become tamei for his sister only when she's a naira. Kamash malon, therefore the pasuk needs to tell us with the word elav that says that not. Which thing would we have learned Basula from? Rashi says we would have actually learned from Naira Basula about the case of Oynes. Ki yimtze ish Naira Basula, and if ma'anis her, then you have the dinim that we talk about at the top of the Amud, where he has to pay a knas and he's forced to marry her. So there it clearly spells out Naira. Tosva says that no, we would have thought to learn from the Kohen Gadol Basula, where it says, Bahu Yishav B'Basula HaYikach, once we establish that B'Basula HaYikach means appointed a mayor, that she has to be a Naira, not a Begeris, then we would have said the same thing over here. And therefore, we need the word Elav to tell us that not. So that is how Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda understand the passage. Rav Yosi and Rav Shimon Mai Taimayu. Meanwhile, how do Rav Yosi and Rav Shimon learn it? They say, Darshi Hoki. They darsh in the passage as follows. They say that v'lachos absula comes to exclude any case where she's lacking her besulin, including mukas eight. So not only anuso mufuta, where it happened through a man, but also mukas eight, where it didn't. Then they continue asher lo hoisa, when the pasuk says that she was not, that means prat la arusa, it comes to exclude an arusa. Because again, there was havaya, there was kedushin, where the word hoisa or tia or whatever often refers to kedushin. Hakroiva l'rabis arusa sheniskausha. Now they continue, what is the hakroiva, what is the one who's close, add? That means if she was an arusa and then she was divorced without having gone ever through nisuin, now her brother can be matami for her. Elov, the rabbis is a begeris, and the word Elov, they agree with Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, comes to include a begeris. So that's how they learn the pasuk. The Gemara says, what do you mean, hakroiva l'rabbis arusa nishinaskarusha? What do you mean that the word hakroiva they're adding means an arusa who was divorced? Didn't Rav Shimon say the rule that it depends whether she's roi to a kohen gadol? If she's a grusha, even from erusin, obviously she's also to a kohen gadol, she's also even to a kohen hedyot. So how can Rav Yosi and Rav Shimon be saying that now she was an arusa, now she's divorced, now her brother is able to be matana for her? The answer is shiny hosam, the Rabbi Rachmana Kroiva. The answer is precisely because the Torah says the word Kroiva, then Rav Shimon says this is an exception to the rule of that only if she's roi to a kohen gadol. The Gemara says, well, by the same logic, you could re-include a mukaseit. Why are you excluding her? The answer is Rabbi Kroiva Achas Velo Shtayim. The answer is, since we have only the word Kroiva in the singular, it means there's only one case that we can be Marbe, not two. Well, the Gemara says, Mara Isa. Well, what's the logic? If we have, on the one hand, then Arusa Shiniskarisha, on the other hand, we have a Mukas 8, and Rav Shimon is telling us that the Arusa Shiniskarisha, her brother, can be Matame for her when she dies, but not a Mukas 8. What's the logic? If you're saying it's only based on the word Kroiva, why are you assuming that Kroiva refers more to one than to the other? The answer is, Hois Abed Bamaisa, Holois Abed Bamaisa. The answer is that when it comes to the Mukas 8, something actually took place. There was a physical thing that caused the removal of her psulit, as opposed to when she's in Arusa, she's in Sgarsha, there was no physical action done. She received Kiddushin, but that's it. There was no Bia because there was no Nisuin. So therefore, so he says, if the Torah is being Marba from the word HaKroiva, it's more logical that we're going to include that one and say that her brother can be Matami for her. Vera Biosi. Now, let's consider Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Now, we see like this. When we look through the opinions that we had in the Braisa on Omer Aleph, we see like this. When it comes to Achose Arusa, then we had two Tanoim who say that he can't be Matami for her, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. On the other hand, when it comes to Mukas 8, then it's only Rabbi Shimon. So apparently Rabbi Yossi agrees with Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir about Mukas 8, that the brother can be Matami for her. So let's figure out Rabbi Yossi, let's figure out the basis of Rabbi Yossi's opinion. So, since he abandoned his partner, since we see that when it comes to Arusa, he's agreeing with Rav Shimon that the brother cannot be Matama for her. We're talking about Arusa without Gerushin. She had Erusin and then she died during the Erusin. Then Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon are saying he can't be Matami for her. On the other hand, when it comes to Mukas 8, only Rabbi Shimon is saying that he can't be Matami for her, implying Rabbi Yossi would allow it. Well, Miklal de Mukas 8 kid of Meir Svirale. So evidently he agrees with her mayor about Mukas 8. So Minole, so where did he get that from? So the answer is Miloy Hoy Salaish. The answer is he darshins the word Loy Hoy Salaish, the same way as Rameyer does, the same way as Rameyer and Rabbi Yehuda do. That Loy Hoy Salaish does not refer to Kedushin. It refers to, even though the word Havaya often refers to Kedushin, rather it refers to that her change in status, namely her going from Basula to non-Basula, happened through Ish, and here it didn't, because it was Mukaset. So therefore he says that therefore the Torah is not excluding a Mukaset. So the Gemara says, "Vaha Pikdei." What do you mean? According to we just said before that where were Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon learning that the Kohen cannot be Matame to his sister when she's in Arusa? They're learning from the word Loihoisa, where they're saying that Loihoisa refers to Kiddushin. So how is he now using the same word Loihoisa Laish to tell us about Mukasets? The answer is Chadmi Loihoisa v'Chadmi Laish. The answer is that Rabbi Yossi would break up that phrase Loihoisa and Laish. So loy hoisa would mean that kiddushin was not done, and in this case, kiddushin were done. Therefore, he says you can't be matame unless they divorced, and then he's learning from hakroiva that it's allowed. But then he takes the word laish separately and learns from that a mukas eitz would be fine because then there was no ish involved. So in other words, so we have three different ways of understanding it. We have two different ways of understanding it. We have, let's see. We have Rav Meir's way. We have three different ways of understanding it. We have Rav Meir's way, who says that loy hoisa does not refer to kedushin at all. The whole phrase loy hoisa laish means that her change from basula to non basula happened through a man, as opposed to when it didn't. So therefore, Rav Meir has no basis to exclude an arusa, and he says that loy hoisa laish tells us to not exclude a mukaseit. At the other extreme, Rav Shimon is saying loy hoisa means she hadn't had kedushin. And on the other extreme, Rav Yossi is saying that loy hoisa laish means she has not had kedushin with a man, implying once she had kedushin, then she's osur. And he learns from la hoisa abasula that mukas eitz is included in that as well, because she's not a basula anymore. Rav Yossi was saying, is taking a middle ground. He's saying that the words loy hoisa laish, we break up. Loy hoisa, he learns like Rav Shimon, that refers to kedushin rather than the injury of rather than losing the solim. The loy hoisa refers to kedushin rather than losing the solim. But laish teaches us that loss of the solim, to make it that her brother can't be matame for her, has to be through laish, not through a piece of wood. So those are the different ways that the Tanoim explain it. Now we said Eilov l'rabbis habageres. Now we said the word Eilov, continuing in the pasuk, everybody agrees that that includes a bageres. So the Gemara says, how at least according to Rav Shimon, how can you do that? But Amar Rav Shimon, b'sula shleima mashma. According to the Meir, we understand, because in the sugya on Daf Nun Tes, we said that according to Rav Meir, the word b'sula in and of itself includes even a partial b'sula, and therefore we said that's why the word b'suleha teaches us that the Kohen Gadol cannot marry a begeris. But Rav Shimon, we said, took it the other way around. Rav Shimon had said the word b'sula in and of itself means a b'sula shleima, and b'suleha, and b'suleha means afilu miktas b'sulim. So according to Rav Shimon, the word b'sula in and of itself means a complete b'sula, and only because it says by the Kohen Gadol the word b'suleha are we darshaning it differently. Well, then according to Rav Shimon, the word b'sula means a non-begeris. So according to him, why is the Kohen allowed to be metame for his sister when she's a begeris? The answer is time de nami hosa mehocha. The answer is you're right. His explanation of the word besula in connection with the Kohen Gadol is based on his explanation over here. The Dorish Hochi. He darshan the pasuk as follows. Need the Elov, the rabbis a begeris. He says, since you need the word Elov to include a begeris, Miklal the Basula, Basula Shlema Mashma, implies that if you don't have the word Elov, then it means Basula would mean a complete Basula. And therefore, he says that's why, by the Kohen Gadol, we start off with Basula meaning a complete Basula, and then the word Bivsuleha teaches us that she can be a Begeretz, because then her Basulim are weakened but not removed. Whereas your mayor says the other way around. Since over there he learns that Basula in and of itself means whether she means even niktas besula, because even then she can still be called besula. Therefore, he says the word bivsulaha comes to tell us that she has to have the full strength of her besulim, namely to not be a begeris. So according to the mayor, we definitely need the word elav. According to Rav Shimon, what we're saying is precisely because the Torah adds the word elav, that forces him to reinterpret the word besula to mean that without the word elav, it means besula shleima. So ultimately, they both come out to the same result, that they both say a Kohen can be metame for his sister, who is a besula, who is a begeris, but they arrive at that by different ways. Rav Meir, by saying in and of itself, besula would mean in and of itself, besula means miktas besula, but we would have thought to learn from elsewhere where besula means davka and naira, according to Rashi from the case of Ones, and according to Tosfos from the Kohen Gadol, and therefore the word elav tells us don't do that. And according to Rav Shimon, the fact that we need the word Elov tells us that otherwise Besula means Besula Shlema. And because we have the word Elov, then it tells us that not. When it comes to these machloikas, and when it comes to the first one about Achose Arusa, then the halacha is like Rav Yossi and Rav Shimon. When it comes to the second one, about Mukas Eitz, there the halacha is like the other Tanoim. So ultimately then a Kohen can be Metame for his sister when she passed away, if she's not an arusa or married. Once she's married, then no. And once she's an arusa, then we're saying if she got divorced, then yes, as long as she's still a basula. Not if she's an arusa or mafuta, but he is allowed to if she's a begeris or if she's a mokaset. Okay. New topic, also in continuation of which kind of women a kohen is allowed to marry. Tanya, we learn in a brisa. Reb Shimon ben Yochai Yomer Giyores Chosim about Shalosh Shanim V'Yemechad Ksheira LaKohana. Now, like this, we know the Torah tells us that a Kohen is not allowed to marry various women, one of them being a Zoyna. Now, one of the meanings of we're going to discuss on Samach Aleph Amud Beis what the definition of Zoyna is. But the halacha is at any time there was a bia with somebody who would be also to her. Now, we take the assumption that the goyim are promiscuous, and therefore any woman who is above the age when bia has validity in halacha, namely we're from 3 years old and older, where at that point bia is meaningful in halacha. Before that, we said a few dafim ago, it's not considered bia. So therefore, once she's 3 years old, if she becomes a giyuris, then she's not allowed to marry a kohen. Everybody agrees to that. What about if she becomes a giyuris under 3 years old? So Rav Shimon says that Sheira Lakohuna, such a girl, she was this guy under 3 years old, she would be able to be marrying a Kohen Gadol, because Rashi says, Loi machsakin and lokeh zoyna, we don't give her the chazaka of being a zoyna, because even if they had had relations with her at that age, in terms of halacha, that's not considered bia. And he brings a proof from a pasuk in Chumash. Shenema, you have the story in Melchemes Midyan, where they come after Melchemes Midyan and Parshas Matos. They come back with a huge number of captives. And Moshe tells them these are the very same women who got the Jewish people involved in Baal Peor and caused the plague over there. So therefore, he says you have to kill all the adult women. And the pasuk continues, "V'cholat hafan nashim asher lo yodu mishkav zachor." All the children, all the young girls who have not yet known the lying with a man. In other words, they're still basulis. Hach yulachem, you can keep alive for yourselves, implying it sounds like we're saying you can be megayer them and marry them. Vare Pinchas imayim. Pinchas was there together with them because he had 12,000 soldiers, and the pasuk says Pinchas went along as well. So if Moshe is saying generically, "Hach yulachem." The implication is saying even Pinchas was a Kohen, and in fact, even some of the Poshim point out, he was a Kohen Meshuach Melchama, where for many dinim, he has the dinim of a Kohen Gadol. So maybe even as a Kohen Gadol, he'd be allowed to, says Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. So that shows, so we're talking about, in other words, these girls are below 3 years old, and when they were captured, and now, therefore, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is saying, once you're Megai of them, then you're allowed to marry them, because then the din of Zoyna can't apply to them, because it's impossible that there was anything done with them that would be considered Bia in Halacha. Bir Rabbanon, what are the Rabbanon answer to that? They say, not necessarily does Hach Yulachem mean keep them alive and be Megai of them and marry them. It means Lavodim L'Shvachis. It means you're allowed to keep them as maidservants. So no proof that you're allowed to marry them. Elsewhere, the Gemara explains that there's a pasuk in Sefer Yechezkel where it lists the dinim of the Kohanim, and it says over there that they have to marry Besulois Mizera Beis Yisrael. Now, that a Kohen has to marry a Besula applies only to a Kohen Gadol. Fine. Some of the Mephoshim explain that La'osid Lavoi, the regular Kohanim will be on the level of the Kohen Gadol of earlier times, and therefore the rules will apply to them. But in any case, the pasuk is Mizera Beis Yisrael, and therefore the Chachamim say on that basis it has to be that the girl was born Jewish, not Misgayu, even under 3 years old. So the Gemara says if you're talking about keeping them as Avodim or Shvachas, then why is the limitation below 3 years old? So the question really is like this. If the question actually Rashi explains is on Reb Shimon, Reb Shimon is saying, So what is the pasuk saying? Any woman who's had relations, then you have to. Then Moshe is telling the soldiers you have to kill. So if Reb Shimon is going to say that, if Reb Shimon is going to say that any girl below three, we don't have to worry about that. Then even above three, if they haven't had relations, they should be able to keep alive. Why is the pasuk saying as a blanket statement that the cutoff point is 3 years old? So the answer is Kidur Rav Huna. The answer is even Reb Shimon is not going to say that on the basis of what Rav Huna said. Did Rav Huna wrong? Rav Huna pointed out a seeming contradiction in the pasuk. Ksiv, one pasuk says that Moshe tells them, "Kol isha yadas ish l'mishkav zachor haroigu." Any woman who knew a man for relations with a man haroigu, you have to kill. Ha eni yadas kaimu, implying that if she didn't yet know, if she's still a basula, then you can keep her alive. Now that's yadas. That's implying when she's old enough to understand what bia is. Miklal daftaf ben yodu ben lo yodu kaimu. So it sounds like the children can be kept alive regardless because they don't have das to know. But then the next pasuk continues. V'chola taf banoshim asher lo yodu mishkav zacher. The next pasuk continues that all the children among the women who have not known mishkav zacher hach yulachem, you should keep alive. Ho yadi haroigu, implying that even among the children themselves, if yodu mishkav zacher, then haroigu. So what is it? Heavy Omer, therefore, Rav Huna says, the Pasuk is telling us, the Pasuk doesn't mean whether they actually had relations. The Pasuk means, are they of the age to have been able to have relations in a way that is considered relations api Allah, namely 3 years old or older. So therefore, in other words, Tosfos explains that if it didn't say the word Isha, then you would say that it means that you would distinguish within the tax themselves. Now because it's saying Isha, then it means an Isha, regardless whether you're Das or not, and within the tax, it depends whether you're Das or not, namely whether they're 3 years old or not. So therefore, that's what we wind up with, that if she's three or above, then that's it, she's a goner, and if she's below three, then she's fine to keep. So even Reb Shimon is going to agree with that, and therefore Reb Shimon is going to say the cutoff point is three. Similarly in a brisa, when the pasuk says b'chol isha yagas ish, when it says a woman who knew a man, that means we don't mean that she actually had relations. We mean she's of the age where relations are possible. Maybe not. Maybe it means only the ones who actually had relations. No. Since the pasuk continues, all the children among the women who have not known mishkav zachar. So therefore, implying that an isha is regardless harigu heavy omer beruuyali boil akotz medaber. Then therefore, it's clear that the pasuk is talking about not whether they actually did, but whether they were capable of it. So the Gemara says, you're going to ask a question. I mean, killing kids, come on, but we have to remember, of course, that this is a direct command by Hashem. This is a direct command by Hashem to Moshe. And as we often have, we have this by Melchamas HaMolech, we have this by the Shiva HaMamin, where there's the idea that Hashem is the only one who can give such instructions because Hashem knows what these kids would grow up to be. And therefore, what harm they could cause if we would never be able to think of such a thing on our own, because we can't possibly know what a kid is going to grow up to be, but Hashem Himself, who knows the future, he can give such instructions. All the death penalties in general, right? But at least when an adult does something which makes them chayiv nisa, then there's more of a more logically understandable. With this kind of thing, it's much harder for us to understand. But nevertheless, we have to know that that's how it is because Hashem knows the future and Hashem knows what this child would grow up to be, where we can't possibly know that. Anyway. So the Gemara says, Minoyadi. Now, how are they supposed to know which girls are below three and which are above three, and which ones are capable and aren't capable of having relations? So the answer is, Omer of Huna, Babizna, Omer of Shimon Chasida, Hevirum Lefnei Tzitz. They had the girls walk in front of the Tzitz. Kosha Paneh Merikos. Anyone where Ness would happen, anyone whose face turned greenish or pale or something like that, Biadurashi Ru'uyali Boil. Then we know that she's of the age where bia is possible. Kosha ain't pronounced marikas, and if her face did not turn like that, biyadurasha ain't ruili bol. Then we know that she's not. And in this connection, Omer of Nachman, simin la avera hidroikon, a simin of when a person has done an avera, where usually avera in Gemara unspecified means nus, hidroikon is a disease which causes a person's face to turn greenish. So Rashi just says generically potential over avera merikin means that their faces turn pale or greenish or something. Tosfos says that actually hidroikon is not exactly, now there's something called yerokon, which is jaundice, where a person's face and skin kata turns greenish or yellowish. Here we're talking about hidroikon is not exactly that. Hidroikon, we find in other places in the Gemara, the main symptom of it is that the stomach swells. However, Tosfos says, evidently, based on our Gemara, apparently it also causes a change in the tinge of the face. So that's not the primary symptom, but it is a symptom. So that relates to this. In other words, that we're saying that when they walked in front of the tzitz, if they were actually over the avera or capable of it, because we assume that the goyim wants the girl, as soon as the girls are old enough to, then they actually would, then therefore that's why their faces would turn color. Marashah relates to the idea. We say in Birkas Kohenim, Yor Hashem Ponavelacha, that Hashem will make his face. So, that's what the pasuk is saying. No. Here the pasuk seems to say that they did. The Marsha relates this to that the pasuk says, Yor Hashem Ponavelacha, Hashem will shine his face towards you. So here, on the contrary, Hashem makes these people's faces not shine, but rather turn a different color. Ben Yehoyada also adds a point, why dafka did they use the tzitz? The tzitz says on it, kodesh l'Hashem. And as we know, Rabbi Rashi mentions at the beginning of this week's parasha, whenever you find geder erva, a fence around to avoid erva, then you find kedusha. So therefore, there's a direct connection between the kedusha of the tzitz, which therefore, so to speak, wouldn't tolerate the over avera and would cause their faces to turn a different color. Esther was not beautiful because she was Yerach Rochus. Esther was beautiful and graceful despite the fact that she was Yerach Rochus. Nevertheless, Hashem caused her to look graceful in people's eyes. Continue. Of course, that wasn't because of Oyver Avera, that was because of something else. We're not saying that every person who has Hidroikon has necessarily done an Avera. We're saying, on the contrary, that Hashem causes that people who do an Avera, it's shown by them having Hidroikon. The Gemara says, Kayotze B'davar Ata Oyver. Now, you have a similar example where they needed to find which women are Besulos or not. You have the story of Pilegesh Begiva. So the story of Pilegesh Begiva, the aftermath of it was that there was a civil war between Shevet Binyamin and the rest of the Shvatim. Almost all of Shevet Binyamin was wiped out. There were only 600 men left and no women. And you had a problem because the Pasuk described the rest of the Shvatim. No, all the women, all from Shevet Binyamin, had been killed. So during, because in the war, they had gone and burnt and destroyed all the cities, and all the women were killed, and there were only 600 men left. So now the problem was that the Pasuk describes over there, the Shvatim, in the heat of the moment, had made a public neder, a binding on the whole Jewish people, that nobody should give their daughters in marriage to Shevet Binyamin. So now, when things were starting to cool down, they realized we have a problem. Shevet Binyamin is going to go extinct. How are they going to have women to marry if we're not allowed to marry off our girls to them? So the first thing they did was, the Pasuk describes, they looked to see, is there anybody who did not, now when we first gathered together in Mitzvah to decide what to do about Shevet Binyamin, we made, everybody has to come. Is there anybody who didn't? And they found that the people of Yabesh Gilad, a city in Eber HaYarden, nobody from there had shown up. Which means a few things. It means, first of all, they were over on a gzera of the entire Kohol, and for that reason alone, they deserved to be punished. The Malbim also adds that they may have also taken the view that because of that, because they broke that, was what caused the defeats of the Jewish people during the first couple of days of the war of Pilegesh Begiva. We find that 40,000 people from the other Shvatim were killed, 40,000 soldiers from the other Shvatim were killed on the first 2 days of the battle, and only on the third day did they finally defeat Shevet Binyamin. So
this war was
to a certain extent it was a mitzvah, but to a certain extent it was based on, so what it is they were doing it because they figured it's such an outrage as was done in Giva, we can't let that go unpunished. What should have happened is that Shevet Binyamin should have dealt with it internally. And in fact, that was what Shevet Binyamin's Sanhedrin essentially argued, mix out, you other Shvatim, we'll deal with it internally. Whereas the other Shvatim figured this is something that we have to deal with at the national level. So that was what the basis of it was. So in a way, they were doing a good thing because they were jealous for the honor of the Pilegesh. On the other, the Gemara criticizes them elsewhere that they should have been equally as zealous about the honor of Hashem. Pesel Micha took place at the same time as well, and nobody went to war over that. So in a certain sense, they were doing the right thing, but in a certain sense, they went about it the wrong way. Anyway, the upshot is, so they found nobody from Yavesh Gilad had shown up. Which again means, first of all, they were over on a gzera of the kohol, so for that alone, they needed to be punished. The Malbim points out over there that they may have also felt that they therefore deserve the blame for the defeat of the rest of the Shvatim on the first 2 days of the battle. And also, Das Sofrim adds a point. They may have figured, listen, why would these people of Yavesh Gilad have not shown up? Evidently, Znus doesn't matter much to them. So therefore, so for all those reasons, the Pasuk says they sent a unit of soldiers over there to wipe out the city of Yavesh Gilad. But again, they said any girl over there who's not had relations, keep them, and they will become the wives for the remaining men of Shevet Binyamin.
Oh, did they wipe them out?
So now the Pasuk says by Yimtzu miYosh veYavesh Gilad, they found among the residents of Yavesh Gilad. They found 400 girls, basulais, who had never known any man and had never had relations with a man. And they brought those 400 and they became wives for 400 men of Shevet Binyamin. And then the Pasuk goes on to describe, you had another 200 and you had the whole thing where the girls were dancing in the vineyard, the girls of other Shvatim were dancing in the vineyards in Shiloh, and they would go and grab the girls and then the loophole would be that you haven't actually given them in marriage. They took them on their own, whatever. You have the whole story over there at the end of Sefer Shoftim. In a way, though, I mean, you know, as much as we're saying that it was wrong of them, for example, to not do something about Pesel Micha, we do actually see from this whole story the level that they were on, that they were so outraged by this one thing involving this Pilegesh, which when you get down to it, we're not even dealing with Mrs. Bastin. A Pilegesh doesn't have Ksuba, doesn't have Kedushin. It's just Znus outside of marriage. And they were so outraged about it that they were ready to go to war and 40,000 people to actually be Moser Nefesh. No, well, it wasn't that in the case of the Pilegesh did end up dying, but it's not that they deliberately killed her. They did so much to her as far as being ma'ana her that eventually she died of exposure and overwork and whatever. So that's the thing. So it was this news that outraged them. But the point is, in other words, we see nowadays you see in the news all the time, unfortunately, you know, you hear about rapes and whatever, and nobody bats an eye, you know, next news item, where here we see they were absolutely outraged by it. The pasuk says at the end of it. The pasuk says at the end of Sefer Shoftim, by Yomim Rahamin Melech Bisrael Isha Yosha Ba'ein of Yaseh. Everybody did what was right in their eyes. And the Gemara, there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. We had it recently in Ein Yaakov that says that according to one opinion, for that reason, the whole Sefer Shoftim is called Sefer HaYosha, the book of the upright. Because even though on the face of it, the pasuk is describing terrible things, terrible anarchistic things that were happening, on another level, it means that the Jewish people were on a high level at that time. And when they thought that something was right, most of the time it turned out that it actually was right, that they were doing the right thing, even though they didn't have a king to tell them what to do and what not to do. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara over here. So the pasuk says that they found these 400 girls. Again, minoyadi, how do they know which girls have had mishkav zachar and which can't? And which hadn't. They had each girl sit on top of a barrel of wine. If she's had relations, then the smell would be detectable. You would smell her breath, and you would smell the wine in her breath. But a basula would not. Now, how does such a thing work? I mean, on the face of it, there's no direct connection between the basulim and the mouth. So there is an interesting thing that I saw. Rav Mordechai Halperin, who was a rav and a medical expert in Eretz Yisrael, he explains, he has a short essay about this, he explains that the difference between a basula and a ba'ula is not only the presence or the absence of the membrane of basulim, it's also a difference of how tight or loose the muscles they are. So he explains that a ba'ula, the muscles are loosened up, therefore there's more of an ability for the wine to penetrate, for the alcohol to penetrate into the tissues over there, and therefore to go into the bloodstream and eventually be detectable on their breath, sort of like with a breathalyzer, as opposed to with a basula, it's not just that the actual membrane still exists, it's also the muscles are more tightly wound up over there. Therefore, the alcohol from the wine is not really able to get into her system in the first place. So that's how he explains our Gemara. Anyway, so that's how they checked it. So the Gemara asked, when they renew lifnate sits, why didn't they do the same thing as with the girls from Midian and have these girls from Yavish Gilad walk in front of the sits? The answer is Amar of Kahana, Breder of Nosan, Lerotzen Lahem Ksiv, because the Pasuk says that the tzitz is supposed to be for good favor for them. Lerotzen Volei the Puranus, implying that tzitz is not meant to be used for punishment. And this would have been for punishment, because anybody who doesn't pass the test is going to be killed. So therefore they didn't want to use the tzitz. So they want to ask the Hochi B'Midian Nami, well then why are they using it by Midian? Amar of Ashi Lahem Ksiv, because the Pasuk says Lerotzen for them, meaning the Jewish people. So lahem l'rotzen v'lo the furnace. So for the Jewish people, the tzitz is only meant to be used l'rotzen. But for the goyim, after the puranos, it can be used even for puranos, which is what they did. Okay. So now, getting back to, so we said that Reb Shimon had said, based on the story of the girls of Midian, that even if they're, that as long as they're under three, when they become geyotis, then a kohen is allowed to marry them. Now we're saying the chachamim disagree, but that's what Reb Shimon holds. So, Amr of Yaakov Ba'idi, Amr of Shimon Levi, Halacha Kirab Shimon Yechai. Halacha is like him, he says, and therefore Kohen would be allowed to marry a Giyotis who became a girl who became a Giyotis under 3 years old. Amr Le Rab Zeira Le Rab Yaakov Ba'idi, but Rab Zeira asked him, Refeiro Shmielach or Miklala Shmielach? You're saying that Rabbi Shimon Levi said the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Did he explicitly say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, or did you deduce it from something that he said? So when the Gemara asked my klala, what would be the deduction? What could there have been that Rabbi Shimon ben Levi did from which Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi could infer that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? Without him saying explicitly. So Dr. Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, because we have something else that Rabbi Shimon ben Levi said. Ir achas hoisa be'Eretz Yisrael. There was a certain city in Eretz Yisrael, Shekara aler arar, where there was an objection raised on it. People were arguing that the families in the city are possible because there was kohenim there who married women they weren't supposed to. So there would have been halalim, yeah. The shiga Rebbe et Reb Roimanus. So Rebbe sent Reb Roimanus to check out the situation. Ubodka, he checked through what's going on in the city. He found over there was a girl who had been nisgayer under 3 years old. V'chshira Rebbe lakona. And Rebbe said that she's kosher to marry a kohen. So we see, therefore, so we could deduce from that that a giyotis of that age is kosher to marry a kohen. So that was the question. Rabbi Yaakov, the answer is, Befeiro Shmieli, no, it's not just I deduced it from that story. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi actually told me explicitly that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. So the question is, the Gemara asks on Reb Zeira, V'imi klola mai. Now, what is Reb Zeira saying? If there's a difference between whether you heard it explicitly versus whether you're deducing it. Well, what's wrong if he deduces it? It seems to be a valid deduction. Rebbe is saying that it's fine for this girl to stay married, so then that shows that it's mutter. The Gemara says no, because Duma shiny hosam however insiv insiv. You could say there's a difference between whether she's already married or not. After all, we said before in the Gemara regarding a Kohen Gadol that Rav and Rabbi Yechanan both said that a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry a Begeres and he's not allowed to marry a Mukas Eitz. But if he married, then it's valid and B'dievet, he doesn't have to divorce her. So the same way we could say over here, maybe a Kohen is not allowed to marry such a girl, but B'dievet he is. Reb Shimon is talking L'Hachila. Maybe Reb Shimon Levi's story is only B'dievet. However, the Gemara says, Hochi Hashta. How do you think to compare the two cases? Why did we say that if the Kohen Gadol marries a Basula or a Begeres or a Mukas Eitz, why are we saying B'dieva they can stay married? Because ultimately she's going to become a Begeres and ultimately she's going to be ultimately she's going to lose her Basulim. So therefore, the fact that it happened ahead of time, finally, you shouldn't marry her, but B'dieva it's not so bad. But over here, the reason why, if you're going to say that a Giyotis is always also because of a Zona, it's not that she's going to become a Zona when she's married. It's not that she's going to gain the definition of a Zona at some point during her marriage. So there's much less of a reason to compare and think that it should be Mutter B'dieved. So the Gemara says, Rav Safra Masni Lo Miklola, Rav Safra now learned that so we had again Reb Yaakov Ba'idi had made the statement that the halacha is like Reb Shimon. Reb Zeira had asked him, did you hear that explicitly or did you only deduce it from this story? He says, I heard it explicitly. Reb Safra Masni Lo Miklola, Reb Safra's version of the answer was that Reb Yaakov Ba'idi said, I heard it Miklola, but Kashalei. So he had the question, how do you compare between L'Hatchila versus B'dieved or Mishani Lehochi? And he answered the same way as we just said, that there's a difference by Mukas Eitz or Begeres, there's reason to allow it B'dieved, much more so than there would be by Giyotis, where after all, it's not going to be Sofalias Zonatata. Okay, so the Gemara finishes off, though, how who Kahana, the Insiv Giyotis, Kusim, Vatshala Shonim Yemechad, there was a Kohen who actually did that. He married a girl who had been this Gaia at the age of under 3. Omalei Rav Nachman Yitzchak Mai Hai. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, what do you think you're doing? Omalei, so the guy says, what do you mean? Omalei Rav Yaakov Ba'idi, Omalei Rav Yishua, Avon Nevi, Alokha Kedav Shem, Meni Yechoi. So I'm allowed to. Omalei, Rav Nachman Yitzchak tells him, Zil apik, go divorce her, the Eloi, and if not, ma pikna la Rav Yaakov Ba'idi me unach, I will take Rav Yaakov Ba'idi out of your una. Which means, so Rashi says it means, I'll put you in cherem, and you're going to be forced to divorce her. The word una can have two different meanings. It can mean meloshin oin, which means strength. In other words, you're basing your strength on Rav Yaakov Ba'idi, but I'm telling you the halacha is not like him. And if you persist in thinking that it is, then I will take away the strength that you're relying on him, and you'll be in cherem. The other possibility is meunach means from your ear. So like, in other words, so to speak, I'll schlep him out of your ear. You're not going to be able to claim anymore that I'm listening to Rav Yaakov Ba'idi because, in fact, the halacha is not like him. And in fact, that is the final halacha. We had this expression, mafich melo meunach, yeah. So that is the ultimate halacha. I think we had it in Moed Katan, for example, yeah. So ultimately, that is the halacha, yes. So a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Giyotis, even if she became a Giyotis under 3 years old. And if he does, then we force him to divorce her, as Rav Nachman Yitzchak did over here. Okay, everyone. Shabbos.